Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Howdy, welcome back. Where were you? We started at 12:05 and I missed you. You can set an alarm. You can, you got to listen. But hey, if you forget, podcast, knssradio.com. Been a little glitch in the normal presentation of podcasts, but they assure me it's going to be fixed by the next week. So right after today, Max loads them up and there you have it, over 2 years worth. On the phone with me, a creative gal. A doctor, Nicola Nice, and she's so many different things, but more importantly, she's deeply involved in some of the history of the cocktail and the women that made it so, ergo the name of the cocktail parlor, her book, How Women Brought the Cocktail Home. Nicola, you organized and put together a great book, but there's a lot of women featured here in some of their writings. Talk about some of those and ones that surprised you or had a special twist, pun intended.
I think that there were so many women that as I was, I mean, obviously I started by collecting their books, right? And then in reading their books, I then wanted to know, well, who were they? So then that sent me off down many rabbit holes investigating who these women were and what their lives were like. What else they did when they were born, when they died, when they got married. I went to census sites. I went to obituaries. I went to grave sites and went through newspaper records to find everything I could. And yes, some of the stories were really inspiring and fascinating, not just because they wrote about drinks. And even the fact that a lot of these women were writing about drinks when, you know, as we sort of discussed in the earlier segment, it wasn't even that possible for women to drink in public. So the fact that they were even doing that was pretty revolutionary. Some of the women that stood out, there was a woman who wrote in the early 1900s by the name of Amy Lyman Phillips. And Amy Lyman Phillips was, you could say, a hospitality and lifestyle journalist. She spent most of her career writing about hotels and restaurants, and she later moved down to Palm Beach and became quite a local celebrity journalist down there. But in 1906, she wrote a book called The Bachelor's Cupboard, which was actually a lifestyle book for the bachelor, teaching hapless young single men how to run an apartment and how to keep it clean without a maid and how to feed themselves and how to entertain. In the section on cocktails, there was maybe 40 or more cocktail recipes in there. She interviewed a lot of bartenders in New York City and in Boston, where she was from, and included a lot of recipes and talked about some of the trends in the bars at the time. And if you could imagine, Guy, that back then it wasn't really possible for women to live a single life. She actually was single and remained single, actually, through her life. But in reading her book and finding out more about her, I started to wonder, I wonder if this was really a book about her life and lifestyle, as opposed to the lifestyle of the men that she was writing for. So a couple of cool things that she did in addition to write about drinks is a few years after, so in 1910, after she wrote The Bachelor's Cupboard, she was the accompanying journalist to Blanche Stewart Scott. And if you know who she is, she was the first woman to fly a plane in the U.S. But before that, she was actually the first woman to drive an automobile from the East Coast to the West Coast. So there had been one woman who had driven from the West to the East. She was the first to drive from East to West by herself. And Amy and her sister Gertrude were the accompanying journalists on that trip. At the same time, Amy was also at one time held the record for the fastest mile by a woman driver in a motor car.
Wow.
She drove a mile at about 78 miles per hour. And I think that was pretty exciting. And so obviously she was just someone who was living her own life the way she wanted to and taking on things that people said women couldn't do and doing them anyway.
I'll be dang. Interesting. You know, I like the way you organize the book. And when I first got it, I thought, well, this will be fun to learn about different time periods, because chapter one, the domestic hostess, 1800 to 1860, you kind of touched on that. The lady hostess, 1860 to 1900. The Tea Party hostess, 1900 to 1920. And then they have kind of the moniker of the drinks of the day then. And the apartment hostess, 1920 to 40. And I think looking at the grand hostess chapter, 1940 to 1960, that's where my mother would have lived, you know. And they made cocktails at home, but it was never quite like the ones at the restaurant, at that beautiful bar, or when they went out. You know, my mother was a piece of work. This was an interesting way to lay it out in the table of contents. Was that something that you started with, or did that come to you as you were looking at all the different time periods and deciding this might be a great way to organize?
That's a great question. So how I went about writing the book was, as I mentioned to you, I'd collected this library of over 200 works, and I selected 100 of them. So The Cocktail Parlor tells the story of the cocktail through the words of 100 women who wrote about it. And what I started by doing was just essentially laying the books out in chronological order and basically asking myself the question, what's the story here? And yes, as you kind of picked up, I realized that there are different waves, if you like, that the cocktail has gone through. And there have been different stages of women's history that have been important as well, right? So I think in particular, if you look at the waves of feminism, and there's also just been different social, cultural, and generational shifts that we've gone through over the last 200 years. And I realized as I sort of put all of these things together that the books were written by a certain type of woman for a certain type of audience writing at a particular moment in time. And so what kind of came to me, yes, was this sort of evolution in the type of hostess who was writing about and serving cocktails. Not to say that was, you know, typecasting every single woman of that generation, but based on how they were writing and what they were writing about and what was going on in the world at the time, it seemed to fit. And it seemed to fit with the different generations of cocktail that we've gone through, from its sort of invention in the mid-1800s and the first real cocktail book that was ever written in 1862 by Jerry Thomas, A Bartender's Guide, through to the Prohibition era, through the mid-century when, to your point, when your mother was hosting, the cocktail party became essentially the symbol of American hospitality around the world, and through to present day and the craft cocktail revival and the bartenders who have been dressing up in their suspenders and, you know, cultivating their wax mustaches to emulate Jerry Thomas and pay tribute to the beginning. So we've almost gone kind of full circle. But yes, I think as you go through the chapters, and as you said, there are 10 chapters, so there's sort of 10 generations of hostess, you'll recognize, I think, something of your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, and so on, and get a little bit more of a taste of what it might have been like to go to a party during the Gilded Age, yeah. Or go to a tea party in the early 20th century, and what you would have been served, and what the dynamic would have been like between men and women, and how the room might have been set up. So I wanted to bring all of those details in, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I got, as the youngest in our family, I got to go to many a cocktail party or a dinner party that started with cocktails with mm-hmm. my folks. And, you know, probably the next chapter, the suburban hostess, is more like my mom. Yeah, they would make some cocktails with sparkling wine, but they were more of these stirred cocktails. And I look mm-hmm. at Manhattan, you know, and martinis and the old fashioned and yeah, that sounds more like, and then the highball. And for my whole life, I thought the highball was like made out of something called highball. And obviously, more recently, I know that that's different, but it's as simple as yeah. a little bourbon, a little club soda, and a twist of lime or lemon. And
right.
pretty fun. You know, do you take the time, effort, and procurement of unusual ingredient to make some of the fancy cocktails at home that are represented in the over 40 recipes that you have in the book?
Well, I'll let you into a little secret. I certainly have made all the recipes in the book, but I think much like the average American, probably have about 3 or 4 cocktails that I make on the regular at home. And yes, they're all cocktails that are in the book. But I think for most of us, we have our kind of comfort zone of drinks that we know we can go back to. And those tend to be drinks that are A, very simple to make, B, very hard to screw up, C, tend to be universally pleasing, right? So if you have people over, they'll probably like them too. And yes, I think the last point is they don't have ingredients that you have to go out and buy for that specific cocktail. I think that can, even for me, who's someone who, you know, I do have a very large bar, I'd say in the end there's like maybe 5 or 6 bottles tops that I reach to on a regular basis to make drinks with.
Yeah, you know, I like everything, and I've had some of the most complicated mixes of beverage. I am not into smoked drinks. Some people are really big on that. And of course, but that's me. I'm not into fruit flavored beer or you know, flute flavored spirits. I like it just the way they come. And in fact, when mm-hmm. we talk about bourbon, I like it in a glass.
Yeah.
By itself.
Yeah.
Favorite spirit in your life?
Oh, I would have to say gin, of course. Yeah.
Tell them why, of course.
So we haven't talked about this, but prior to writing the book, I was the founder of a gin company and ran that company for 7 or 8 years, Pomp and Whimsy. And the whole mission of Pomp and Whimsy was to celebrate the role that women have had in gin. So this was another theme that is parallel to the themes in the book, which is the popularity that gin has had with women from the beginning. And yet it's something that doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the mission of the brand. But
did you do that while you were still in the UK, or was that after you came to the colonies?
So that was over here. Yes. Yeah, so that was since moving to the U.S. I started that business.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool. One of my favorite memories, if I wasn't drinking a hand-pulled pint when we lived in Europe, mm-hmm. in the U.K., was something with gin. Again, because we know that the alcohol laws for driving and a conviction in the U.K. is a bad deal. Even worse than it is here. But having a gin and tonic, a properly balanced gin and tonic with a fresh piece of citrus and nice ice cubes, it's hard mm-hmm. to beat. And that and vodka tonic are two of the most, if we're going to have a cocktail at home, those are the mm-hmm. two, or I'll just pour some bourbon in a glass. And
yes.
What
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, well, that's one of the interesting differences between the UK and the US is that the UK is a gin and tonic culture. And so if you go to the UK now, you'll see that there's been an enormous revival of the gin industry there. And, you know, you can go into your local pub and not just have a beer menu, right? But there's a gin menu and there's a tonic menu. And so it's become really a huge, huge thing there. And you made the really important point in that you talked about a well-constructed gin and tonic. And even though it is only two ingredients, right, plus your ice and your garnish, it's so important to the enjoyment of the gin and tonic that it's made in the right proportion with the right amount of ice. And then it's wonderful. It's a yeah. sublimely refreshing
perfect
drink.
Hey, can you stay with us through one more quick break? I want to come back but I love the frozen daiquiri section. That's mm-hmm. the dinner party hostess, because I did that, and it was in my time period when I was going through pilot training and other flight school stuff. We made daiquiris all the time with a bag of frozen strawberries and some uh-huh. rum. And anyway, but then we gotta save a few minutes to talk about the non-alcoholic classics, too.
Let's do it.
How about let's give away a copy of the book now, though, because I don't want to run out of time. If you'd like a copy of The Cocktail Parlor, How Women Brought the Cocktail Home, it's got 40 recipes for timeless drinks. It's by my guest, Nicola Nice, and you can be nice and be caller number 5 right now. Call in now. Max will take down your info. The publisher will send you a book. The number 316-869-1330. Call now. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.